This is really hard and I don't want to sometimes. I'm just being honest. Like, I do not do it all the time. There's reasons for that. And so I grasp it and try to do it as much as possible. Sometimes I realize, oh, shoot, I did that over there. Let me go do something about that. Welcome to another episode of the Living Out Loud discussion series. Today, we're going to be talking about intent, impact, and accountability with Kim Mettler. I am super excited to get into that. I am your host, Charmaine Utz, a relational DEI expert. If you are new here, we are unpacking real life scenarios and issues that come up at work in professional settings or in areas where we feel like we need to be buttoned up. The goal of every single episode is to reveal the layers and the nuances in our interactions so we can learn about them as a community that cares about diversity, equity, and inclusion. As always, the thoughts, views, opinions, the things that are shared in today's conversation, they are my own and not as a representative of any of the agencies that I work for or am contracted by. Now with me, Kim Mettler is in the building. I am pumped that you are here with me. I've been waiting for a chat. So thank you so much for joining today.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here with you. It's been a minute and I've been looking forward to this.
Yes. Well, you and I have spent a good amount of time working with each other. I've been at the Academy for 4 years and you recently left. And I feel like in the last, for sure, the last two, maybe three-ish years, we've been working on a lot of projects together. Mm-hmm. And through all of those, it just felt like the types of work where we had to be humans doing hard stuff together all the time. I got to know you so well, and you became a lot of things. You were like a confidant, a trusted, safe space, a person to help me learn and grow. You modeled in all the spaces that we were in, you modeled the types of behaviors that I want to engage in. And in many ways, you were like my silent co-facilitator. Mm. You were like everything. And I miss you very much. So I'm really glad that I get to learn some more today. Thanks again for being here. I really appreciate you.
Thank you. And it's mutual. I had that same experience working with you. And I got to give you some credit for inspiring some of my actions and nice. My learning and growing. And I really appreciated that partnership in all of the ways spoken and unspoken. And yeah, we worked together at the Academy for the 4 years you were there. I was there for 8 years. And since then I've grown out of that role, and I've gotten to spend some time nurturing my coaching practice, which is Heart River Coaching. But I've also taken on a leadership role with the Association on American Indian Affairs, which is the oldest Native American advocacy organization in the country. My program is Next Generations. And basically, it's a joke, but not really, but I say that I'm everyone's Auntie Kim. Because my program includes advocacy around Indian Child Welfare Act, safe adoptions, Native youth justice reform, and also a new initiative that I'm developing, which is intergenerational healing. And like you, I just want to say that my views are my own. They don't reflect the other agencies that I work with. But yeah, I appreciate the work that we did together. Helped me grow individually and as a leader. It's really cool to see the ways I can transfer and share that learning in my new role. And it's interesting because our organization is a very small organization. Everyone's Native, with the exception of one who's a very strong ally for us. And it's learning how to translate in my own community this conversation and this learning, but also in thinking in terms of healing ourselves, I have this whole set of new tools and language that, because it's relational, right? And so I have this whole other set of tools at my disposal to be able to say, here's how we're going to work on this together.
Yes. Everything you just said, I was just imagining so many different interactions that we had. I was just going through all of those. First, I'll say I'm very happy about what you are now doing and just fulfilling yourself. Mm-hmm. And I know being even more of a support in the area that you're meant to be. So that's really exciting to hear. And then I was just, like I said, reflecting on a lot of the stuff that we were doing. I think that there's something that we had to come to realize in our work is a lot of what we were wanting to do wasn't necessarily out there readily available mm-hmm. to just translate even inside our organization or for us. We had to spend a lot of time making, like literally making either from scratch or finding ways to adapt and message for our organization, how to take concepts and translate mm-hmm. it to relational, communal, healthy, just healing stuff. Like we were constantly doing that. And we had to rely on, sure, what was out there, but we were like really in our stuff and thinking about like the communities we've been in and what is that like? Mm-hmm. And that was hard there. So then to take it and translate it somewhere else, because that's only specific to that environment. Mm-hmm. There's lots of principles and things that are great about it, but every space is different. So I'm just knowing that some stuff goes, but how it gets molded and shaped is another new mm-hmm. process and a really cool one. Mm-hmm. And I wish there was a way for people to grasp that process and the fluidity. I don't even know what I'm trying to say. There's just this with my hands going, it's like that. Right. Okay, I wish I could explain that to people, but I know you know what
I do know. And I think that was one thing in my career and in my professional life for almost 30 years, I've been in the role as an advocate. I was a lawyer for a long time. Even when I stopped practicing law, I've always been in the role of some kind of an advocate. And it's very much, here's the end result, and this is what you're going to do to get us there, and this is what I'm going to do. And that there's a process in that, but the work that we were doing together is really like slowing down mm-hmm. and finding that space to let process unfold. And without the control, without being clear about what your end result is, I think that was an aspect that was really challenging for a lot of people. And if we're going to couch it in terms of white supremacy, like we're supposed to be go and it's produce. And in this process, we're going to slow down. Everybody's going to chill and we're going to be with what's coming up and we're going to figure it out together as we go along.
Yes.
And it takes, yeah. I think it takes a certain level, definitely takes commitment. It takes a level of courage to be willing to stay in that process. And to what you were saying, Charmaine, too, about there were things out there, but they weren't exactly what we needed. We had to create that. And it was the courage to take that chance and to just mm-hmm. say, let's just see what happens when we do it this way.
Yeah, right. Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm also thinking, so now I'm like, how do you connect? Accountability is actually very much connected to what we're talking about already. Mm-hmm. I think a good connection, tangible connection point is that when we talk about accountability, people's minds usually go to, do you have a checklist? Is it done? Are you accountable to that? Did you get it done? However, there's like a huge part of accountability, which is usually like the relational, the people-y parts that there's not a lot of time space for. It's the least understood. When organizations talk about accountability, they don't often think about the experiences, the behaviors that are happening. It's separate. So I feel like we're moving to this place of expanding people's understanding of accountability. But mm-hmm. I'd really like to start there and be very clear before we even get into intent and impact. When we're saying accountability, what are we talking about? I'm trying my best to give like some words to it. And you're very good at, you do magical things with words. What is your understanding of accountability? Let's start there.
I think my understanding is accountability is taking ownership and being responsible for my impact and for, I think, my impact. I cause things to happen and there are consequences, and we all do that in our actions. And so I think accountability is being responsible and owning that. There's, and I think that's the basic definition, but then a deeper definition or another aspect of it is understanding that those consequences, like, you need to be responsible for those also, good and bad. I think so often we think of accountability in the workplace, and you, employee, are accountable when you don't get your work done, and this is the impact on the business. But that's narrow-sighted, because I think of it in terms of community. There's a communal impact, and it's not just employee who doesn't get work done. It's also supervisor. Have you reflected on your role in this happening? So it's not quite as black and white for me as I think we experience it in the workplace.
Yes. Yeah. I'm glad you actually said community, because I keep thinking about the circle. There's a closing of a loop aspect of accountability for me. There's things that are happening, there's impact, and then there's an accountability to a shared resolution or a mutually understood, beneficial, healthy resolution that usually gets left behind. Because if people get to the point where there's an acknowledgement that something has occurred, there's not as much understanding of what to do once that happens. It's okay, I acknowledge it. It didn't go well. And it's almost like crickets, because it was so hard for people to get to that point. Well, that's a great point. And then another part of accountability is the repair, reform, the conversation about, let's close it. And I don't mean close like it's done, but a full circle loop is what I mean. And then you check back in. And I just really like this concept of that circle, because that is an accountability cycle to me.
I love that. That's really appealing to my Indigenous sensibilities right there, this circle. And what you're reminding me of, if I can share a story that I read, actually, and I'm not sure which book I read it in. It's one of the authors of the book is a man named Michael Yellowbird. And you can look him up online. He does a lot of work around decolonizing mindfulness. He tells this story. He's in social work, and he tells this story about an experience he had with one of his sons. Their family has horses, and they're horse people. And they had gone out on our reservation. They had gone out for a horseback ride. And Michael was in the truck, and his sons were on horses, and he's driving to a place along the river where there were trees. And as he's driving there, there goes the horse without the rider and one of the sons. And he's, what happened is, well, something made this horse nervous, and he threw my brother, and he's okay. So they go and they get him, and he's fine. And they had this conversation, and it was like, there was something that didn't feel right in this area where the horse threw the rider. And they were like, there's repair here. The horse is feeling something, and obviously the rider is feeling something. We need to deal with this. They all went back to the house, and they rested and rehydrated and all of that. And Michael was like, I think we need to go visit one of our spiritual people. They go talk to this elder. And when they arrived to talk to the elder, had this whole prayer ceremony around the conversation, and was like, I can work to heal you around what happened. But here's the thing, is that all of the things around us are our relatives too, and they're impacted. And they're impacted by what happened. And so they drove the hours and hours across the reservation back over to where this thing happened. And they had a ceremony for the trees and for the ground the whole purpose of that was to recognize that it wasn't just the horse that was impacted. It wasn't just the rider, but it was all the things in community here that need to be repaired when something happens. And likewise, when our workspaces, they're community, they're a work community. And if you experience, if you see someone having a disagreement, whether you might not be a part of it, but a witness to it, part of the repair has to include the people who witness this and who are present for that as well.
I love the story. You're a great storyteller. You already know that. You're like, I'm taking you on this journey and I'm going to place you nicely here. Place you nicely here in
Chop
the
kick you.
That's just when that's what happened. I'm there and I'm with you and I'm in a communal space. I'm in many communal spaces and I'm thinking about the many people who experience lots of things. People experience it where they're seeing something and it's almost like they witness it, but maybe don't always associate themselves as part of the experience. While we're in workplaces and while many organizations desire to do deeper level of DEI work, there is that communal aspect that's very important. And if there is the shared accountability, if there is shared experience, I really appreciate this idea that if something's happening here, then it's happening here. There's, we're all here. And while person A might have impacted or is saying something to person B, what usually happens in those places is if it gets addressed, it's offline with those people. And then the other people go and talk to the other people. And it's everyone experiences it outside of in all their places, but it doesn't get discussed in the place that it happened where everybody was.
Yeah.
And I think that people can see themselves an example like this. How many times have you gone into a meeting or a session or whatever it was? You have a lot of thoughts, feelings, and you see the stuff going on. And then you leave and you talk about it. You talk about the impact. You talk about your thoughts, but you don't share it in that space. So nothing really changes
exactly.
About that space.
Exactly.
But you did get to say stuff outside of.
Yeah. Well, but I think that's really important is that, and that's, there's a microaggression. Somebody says something. There's a microaggression. And let's say somebody says, oh, well, you know what? We should get together and powwow about that. And Kim's in the meeting. And it's like, oh, is somebody else going to say it? No, nobody's. Okay. So I'm going to say it. I'm going to call this out. And then afterwards, how many people are just like, oh, I'm glad you said something, Kim, because I heard that and I felt some way. And it's like, why? I'm the one that was impacted as a native person. I experienced that as a microaggression. You're supposed to, you walk around talking about how you're an ally. Why didn't you be an ally in that moment? That is an impact to allies as well. Folks have feelings about it. And what happens in those spaces when people don't just do the brave thing and the really uncomfortable thing and step up, all of those side conversations, they just fuel the separation. They fuel the toxicity. They reinforce the culture that you're trying to change. The other thing I want to say too about this, you and I had a conversation once and you said there was a particular thing that had happened. And I've been walking around going, I'm still affected by this. And nobody else seems to care about this. And you had said, well, because they didn't experience that as a we thing. That was a you thing. That wasn't a we thing. That's a shift that needs to happen, is to understand that in community, what happens to you happens to me. And our internal experience may be different, but that's what community is. And that's the relational aspect of the conversation, is that it may not appear to be impacting other people, but it really is. And some people might internalize it and be like, wow, that really sucked. And I didn't like that. Oh, well, my voice isn't going to matter anyway. I'm just going to do my thing. Or people take it offline. And now we have little factions, but nobody's actually dealing with the problem.
Okay. So that's all true. It's true. I think because a result of our conversations and my experiences of deciding to not to say something, I've been super intentional with myself about if you are going to say something outside of the space for whatever reason, then you need to make sure, one, it comes back. You cannot say something. And that's just if I need to process or it comes later, whatever. But when I'm in spaces, mm-hmm. I'm like, well, if you don't say it here, this is just to me. If you don't say it here, then you're not going to say it. And anyway, so me doing that, mm-hmm. it doesn't work all the time. But me having this intentional, you will do this, forced me to realize how much it comes up. And it isn't always an easy thing because it's, dang, well, why wouldn't I say something? Mm-hmm. Why would I rather do that? And then when I do say something, there's a lot of, you gotta say it. So you gotta, and I've actually been prefacing a lot of things with, I gotta say a hard thing. Like, just, I have to say a hard thing. It comes out like that sometimes, or in a way that's probably awkward, because inside I'm like, you gotta say something. But the point of it is, what we're talking about, I value, I believe it's so important, and it's not the easiest thing. And it makes me think about another, there's a few things we actually need to do and demystify, mm-hmm. is talking about safety, talking about discomfort, talking about impact itself and intent. So I think that for me, when someone hears this, my first thought about what someone would say is, it's not always safe to do it. Or people feel like it's mm-hmm. not safe to say something. And if we could just chat yes. for a moment about safety versus discomfort, that would be great.
I love this conversation. I love this conversation. And I'm really glad you're shifting it around to that. Because you're right. I can hear the people, well, I don't feel safe doing it. So my question is, are you sure it's not safe, or you just feel really uncomfortable? Yeah. There's a difference between the two. And I think it's important to understand the difference between that safety part of it and just feeling immensely uncomfortable. For some folks in the workplace, when I think of times that I have felt unsafe in voicing my opinion, it is because I'm a woman, because I'm older, because I'm Native. And how is my being me in saying this thing, how is this going to jeopardize my job? How is this going to make me the problem employee? How is this going to be utilized to create this idea that you can't work with Kim or whatever? And in some instances, there's times that I felt physically unsafe in a workspace, right? And that's, unfortunately, that's a real experience for folks versus the knot in the stomach, the, oh my God, everybody's going to be looking at me and they're going to be saying stuff about me. And am I off base? Am I really, gaslighting yourself, I guess. I think people have to be able to reflect personally, because I can't decide for you, are you really unsafe or are you just uncomfortable? But it's really critical for people to do that kind of reflection.
Yes. It's very true that we can't name for people. We can't tell people what is and isn't safe. But I think the question that you asked in the beginning is important. Like, is it? And I don't think that we should be doing that to people all the time. Is it? Is it? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that. But the question you're asking is important, and it's invitation to mm-hmm. self. Because just from doing enough work with people, I'm doing versions of therapy at work. Like, I'm doing versions of that, just being honest. In doing that, helping people understand what is underneath these responses and thoughts that they have. Mm-hmm. That's what I do all the time. And that's why I feel comfortable and confident in saying that while it's true, safety is a factor, it's common for people to say something's not safe when what's underneath isn't safety, it's incredible discomfort, mm-hmm. incredible fear. But it's not necessarily that they aren't safe. But without the introspection, without the deeper work of being able to slow down, be embodied, mm-hmm. pause, if you're not able to do that, you don't really know that. So your instant biological responses are usually speaking for you or not speaking for you, should I say. So it makes it really hard. I think that's why you and I worked really hard, and we didn't just do stuff by ourselves. There's other people that worked on things with us, but the individuals we were working with were so pushing the deeper work and helping create tools and resources to get deeper into body, so that when you're in these moments, you have more information. It might not be safety this time. And the last thing I'll say on that too is when I get coaching from Amy McDonald's Chipotle Stickles, I just appreciate her question to me all the time, which is she's not afraid to actually ask the question, what's unsafe about it? Let's name that. What's unsafe about it? Because the question itself makes you have an answer. And it's what is truly unsafe? Are you afraid something physical is going to say what it is? Because that can also help you see if maybe that's a little off for that particular situation. And all of this requires community and relationships and stuff to be able to do that.
Well, I was going to say, in the work that we've done together, you're right. There were a lot of other people. It wasn't just you and I out here being heroes.
Running the show.
I can think of some collaborations that we did. And when I reflect on why were we able to push ourselves into that deeper work? Well, we created a space of trust and respect. And that created, I don't want to use the word safety, but it was like, it created a place where I could try it, where I could, even if it didn't feel safe, I felt like I could reach out and I could try this thing.
It was very relational. There was no other way around that. We had built also relational equity. Because when we had to deal with things, because we did, when we had to deal with things or something occurred in a shared space, we had to really rely on the relational equity to do something about it. And there was no amount of length of time that we worked together that took away from the discomfort of it. It was not a comfortable thing. It just wasn't.
Right. There's something else I want to mention in this, because we're talking about the ability to reflect, the ability to give feedback, to ask these questions. And I feel like those are skills that nobody's born with those things, which is when we're talking about accountability and we're talking about having a conversation where we ask somebody what's unsafe or whatever. It takes a skill set for people to hear feedback in a good way, to give feedback in a good way. I think it's a skill set for people to be able to reflect. And how do we get those skill sets, right?
It's also not a skill set that you can get fully in even a training. So there's that. And there's the added layer of you actually have to go through these things to see how they look and feel and how they change depending on people, groups, times of a year or day or society. There's that part. It's practice component and it's learning. I appreciate the lens too. And that's why I do think it's important to model as much as possible. Leaders in particular, I believe, have a responsibility to be modeling a lot of this stuff that we are hoping to do in an organization that is a major trust and safety creator or inviter.
Yeah.
And my mind goes too far there. I was like, no, you're going to go in another land. But
I watched it because I was going there too.
I was like, no, not. But we need to also address the intent impact, because we keep talking about an impact and that hasn't been explicitly discussed either. So it's another thread in there that's also makes things even more confusing for people. So intent, impact, thoughts on that? got a whole lot of
there's books. A lot that's going on in here around that. Yeah, so you're what you intend or what you mean to have happen may not be what actually happens, right? The impact of it. I think intent does count for something, because I've heard so often in my work, it's just, oh, well, intent and impact, it's the impact that matters. At the end of the day, the impact matters, but I don't think we should discount intent either. That's what I have to say about that, is I think there's a balancing in a way, but at the end of the day, accountability, we all have an impact. I might mean to compliment you. I might mean to compliment you. My intent is to say something nice to you. But if it doesn't land that way.
I have seen that. And it just goes to this phenomena, I think, that happens in this type of work, where when you learn something, you go from here to there. Like, you just go to the opposite end of a spectrum. And it becomes this, you do it all the time, you do it never. It I don't know, it's frustrating as a person who, like, leads, trains this work, because I'm like, it's not always this thing over here or the whole opposite over there. It's been, like, really challenging to get people to see that what's being shared is just more information to understand the balance and the pieces. Mm-hmm. So when you said that we care more about impact, that has been the case, because impact was, and still is today, but brushed aside by, here are my intent though.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just dismissed. And now, I've seen spaces where there's so much focus on impact that intent, there is no space for it. And I think what I'm hearing you say is they both exist. Mm-hmm. How they coexist is important though. So where does intent come into play? And I think that this is also where people need to understand themselves and where it's coming from, because if it is coming from this place of, well, but I didn't mean it, and it comes off dismissive, and there isn't space for the impact, then it isn't that helpful or healthy when you're dismissing and removing any space for the other experience. And this is just more skill set stuff, because it's really hard to actually hold both.
Yeah, well, and then I was just thinking about how I'm envious of your work and your experience in a way, because of all the spaces where you show up and you facilitate and you hold these things, you have the experience of those nuances, and you have the experience of holding the complexity of these things we're talking about. That's your role, you know, as our relational person, right? It's just so easy. I think when we get stressed and we're vulnerable, or we don't really completely understand, we get caught off guard, and it's easy to turn things into black or white, when the reality is that there is nuance. I was thinking about this conversation. The visual that comes to my mind is, let's say I'm holding a hatchet and I go and I drive the hatchet into the trunk of a tree and then I pull it out. There's a visible impact to what I've done. Mm-hmm. And like, when we're talking about consequences and accountability, does it matter if I did it just because I felt like being destructive? My intent was simply to be destructive, versus I actually am trying to rid this tree of the branch, which is dead and it has illness and it's going to infect the rest of the tree. It's we're going to have two different conversations, right? That's what I'm talking about. I need work in this, to be honest. I mean, this is a place where I have this really clear information. So we need to work on nuances around things, because I tend to be a black and white thinker sometimes. And when we're talking about human beings are complex, it's a disservice when we want to keep things that simple, I think, sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the grounding point, I believe, is what you were talking about very early on, is if the goal, first of all, if an organization's goal or a team's goal or whatever, because not all organizations are doing this deeper level of work, and maybe this is like pockets of team, mm-hmm. but wherever it lives, if the goal is communal, shared experience of different relationships or healthier relationships, if that's the goal, then you hold that together and you prioritize the relationships. So whatever is happening, mm-hmm. you are prioritizing your understanding of people. You're curious about what's missing, what you're missing in with whatever information that you have. You want to know more about what happened. You want to know what's your part in doing something differently because you care about the relationships. Mm-hmm. But if that's not the grounding point, then you are seeking specific actions to just do. I just want to do what I'm supposed to do. But if it's relational, that's where the nuance comes because everybody's different. Like, so what is this? What does this mean to you? And there's a level of curiosity and inquiry and question asking that doesn't happen often. There's skill set, there's space for it. If that's even the goal of the team or organization that you're in, is if we don't know, we make a lot of assumptions. And unfortunately, if we do make assumptions and we don't really know what's happening, I think that's where a lot of harm mm-hmm. can happen. A lot can happen. I'm thinking about that. I'm going back to safety, discomfort, accountability, and I'm thinking about these shared spaces that we're talking about. Because in our effort to speak up sometimes, or our effort to engage in the spaces, it's already hard enough to take those risks to do that, because not a lot of people use that space. Mm-hmm. So when you are brave or take the risk to do it, one, these conversations are already, there's a lot of feelings. And two, we are humans with our own feelings while we're in the space with feelings. So when we take these risks and we're sharing what we're sharing, when people experience people actually taking the risk and sharing things, that makes people uncomfortable. That can even make people think they feel unsafe, when it's not necessarily always fair to say that they're in an unsafe environment just because they're in the presence of other people's thoughts and feelings. Mm-hmm. And that's why introspection is important. And if we're not careful in the space in which is holding the emotions and people taking risks, if we start to label that as unsafe, we literally will never get to where we're trying to go. It's really dangerous to weaponize the very place that we're trying to create. I hope
I'm sitting here, I'm like, hell yeah. No, I think that was really important point to make, how people experience others and their courage in the face of discomfort or literal lack of safety. And I think that's really critical how you said that, to weaponize the space, because how are we here as a derogatory term? Oh, do you not have your safe space? How has that been weaponized already, right? And I do think that this idea of safety has been weaponized in these conversations. And I think it's important to address that. And it comes down to, again, defining this is what we mean by, and working on the self-reflection and working on honing that ability to ask, to inquire. I think that's something that goes hand in hand with the other things we're talking about, is the skill of inquiry. Instead of making assumptions about, oh, Charmaine doesn't feel safe because Kim said X, Y, and Z. Sometimes you can visibly see what's going on with people, instead of, oh, hey, I noticed that you're responding to this conversation in a particular way. Can we talk about it? What's going, will you share what's going on? And I think, again, people don't fear, or they don't know how, or I think we need to acknowledge there are people that actually don't care.
Yeah.
They're in the spaces and they're participating in these spaces because they're told to do it, but they're not actually owning or buying into it. They don't care. They're doing it because they just want to get through this meeting in the day and go about their business.
Yes.
But yeah, I think inquiry is a part of this conversation as well. How can we address the issues that are coming up? How can we create supportive spaces that allow people to grow and to make mistakes and to do the scary things if we spend our time making assumptions and conclusions based on the limited information we have?
Yeah. Yes. There is an important branch to what you're saying that I actually do want to name, because I think it's an added layer of responsibility for leadership. But we're already in this territory of, this actually is a significant skill set to do this. Mm-hmm. This is why it's important to do deeper work. What is so common, though, is there's like a, I'm just going to stay with this circular shared space example. There's the stuff that we see, and then there's a lot that we don't see. There's a lot of people don't take those risks and engage in that shared space and hold it. And a lot of people aren't accountable to a communal, healthy relationship. Mm-hmm. It's hard to build that if we're not doing that there. And instead of leaving the space and then having the offline, silent, indirect conversations. Now, what happens and what a lot of employees find themselves in are these afterward consequences of taking risks and saying something, where people who are in that shared space will leave, tell individuals who hold power what they thought and felt, and then ask those people to take care of the problem that they felt. And that's really impactful because, one, there's a lot of things that get cut off to even fully grasp what's happening or to get people to think through some of what they truly are experiencing and what might have been problematic about it. There's not a lot of inquiry and question asking at the front. So unfortunately, it's common practice for, one, don't engage in the shared space. There's that. Then, two, leave. You don't want to deal with something, so you want it cut off. And you're not even held accountable as a person to explore. There's no question asking here. You just get it resolved. And on the other end of that is a consequence for another person that now has to think through things when there wasn't any shared accountability to think through something for themselves. Now, I understand that this is not an always situation. I'm just speaking to common employee experiences where I have seen a consequence on another end that when you track it back to the person who's having the indirect, silent actions take place over there, over here, when you come back to this person and you dig deeper, there were lots of questions that weren't asked. There was no introspection. There was no accountability there. None. Which is a problem because there's no accountability here. Then there's no accountability for the leader who took it. There's no accountability for the shared space. And this is the fullness of the accountability conversation. Mm-hmm. So when organizations are hearing there's not accountability, these are the types of things that we're talking about. And they're harder to you can't quantify it. You can't quantify it. It's hard to tell a story like that, but it happens so much. I've seen it a million times. Not a million. I've just seen it a lot. I've seen it a lot. It's everywhere. It's everywhere.
Well, I know exactly what you're talking about. I've experienced that.
Yeah.
It's like Kim did X and I thought it was problematic that Kim did this. So instead of in the moment, in the shared space going, hold up, I want to check in about this thing. Everybody goes about their business, and everybody who is impacted by what they think Kim did that was problematic goes to other people. Kim hears about his second hand. So now we have two problems. We have the original issue that came up, but now there's trust because it's like, oh, all these people are talking behind the back. And the question is, it's just like, where's that inquiry? What had you not raised this issue in the moment? What was the impact on you that this thing happened? Would it be like if you went and talked to Kim or whoever? And that's really the thing, because for me, it all just comes down to we're all in community together. And when we share a communal space, an organization, we're talking about when we're in a meeting together and something happens, everybody there is having an experience about the thing that happens. And maybe some people literally don't give a crap what happened. It has no influence on their existence in any way. That's fine. They can decide that. But those impacts, I think, are cumulative for some people within an organization. And so if this is, if you have somebody that's been around for 10 years and this is their experience every time, at some point, when do we say this feels broken and we need to do a whole different level of repair here?
It makes me sad when I think about it, just because this is so common in organizations. If they do get to a point, if they get to this point, first of all, if they get here, and then when they're here, and here is this place where these are the interactions that are happening that people say they want to do something about. It's sad because the only thing that's truly being held accountable is the person who's making people feel uncomfortable or unsafe, uncomfortable, a lot of feelings. Mm-hmm. And it's a shared space. So if the accountability is around the person who's creating feelings that people don't like, then the message is also sent that these are the consequences for doing this.
Yes.
When we're not having, says if we had a conversation in the shared space, and I'm very certain of this just because people tell me all kinds of things. Every time I go to organizations, I hear all the things. People tell me all the, it's fascinating to hear the various perspectives in a setting, from the people who do speak to the people who don't, to the people who send me private messages. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. Because sure, there's people that feel discomfort. And there's people who are so glad that someone said something. Mm-hmm. And there's people who are more than happy that they're in a space that someone can say something. And there's people who don't care. But when the decision is made to implement a consequence or hold accountability to the person who speaks based on a group feeling one way, there is a shared expectation now that's been told to a group that you'll be held accountable if people feel this way. And there, we've just literally set up what the space is. It's not open anymore.
Yeah.
It's really unfortunate. So when that happens, it's damaging. It's damaging. I've had really interesting conversations with leaders to say, I can't ever really say like, your staff told me this. I won't do that. But I will invite them to think about the other options.
Mm-hmm.
Have you considered there's other things that might be happening, but you zoomed in here because you aligned with mm-hmm. them. And there's consequences for now. There's more damage that's been done. It's such a complex situation.
It is. And as I'm listening, I'm thinking of folks that have come to me for coaching, and they're folks that are not in leadership positions. And they're like, this is my experience with my supervisor. And I always try to get, that's your job as a coach, right? Is to ask those questions. And it's just like, why don't you say something? And it's interesting to me that people are willing to address, they are willing to bring this issue to a stranger before they're willing to bring it to the person where the issue is. And I'm just curious, what would you say to a leader, given the example you just gave? There was an issue, now there's a consequence based on the group. We've created this space. What advice would you give to someone in a leadership role about how to avoid creating, I'm going to call it an unfriendly space, or I don't know what else to call it, but how, what advice would you give to someone in a leadership role about cultivating the friendly spaces where the difficult things can happen and the process can happen and we can do the hard things?
Well, anytime I think about something like that, I always think about where are the opportunities to get a leader to look inside about their own thoughts and feelings and awareness about a situation. Like I will always think that. And beyond themselves, what is your awareness of all the things here? If you don't have one, why not? Mm-hmm. What's up with that? Or if you do, what's your response to the shared perspectives here? Because usually that translates to identifying where they don't know things, or they're not asking questions, or they're not slowing. It usually reveals the responses and what it's saying. And then have a lens that other people are going through that same thing. And that lens then means that you have a curiosity about the varied experiences and thoughts. And that before you do anything next, if it's a decision to make or if it's a created space, there is an active choice to have to do something next based on the variety of people and experiences and feelings and stuff. That's like the only, that's my work with people. Whenever there's a problem, we go inside first. Like, just, what are you even aware of? And if you don't know that there's a problem, you haven't even asked enough questions. You're missing information. Mm-hmm. Why are you missing information? Or why do you only know this information? What is the impact? If you only know the impact here, why don't you know the impact here? It just reveals where they're not looking.
Yeah.
Why aren't you looking there? That is the work. That's the best way I can even describe that.
I think I appreciate that. I'm in a leadership role where I feel comfortable. Well, because I'm me, I guess. And I think the nature, the coworkers, as I've come to know them, we're all very similar in personality. And the things that I've heard each of us literally blurt out during a meeting, I have a level of comfort that I will be able to navigate the moments that I need to navigate. I feel really fortunate, and I want to just acknowledge that is a place of privilege as a leader. And I think what I would say to leaders listening to this is I would look intently in their eyes and I would say, like, you're going to have to be like really brave and don't be afraid to, because it's you there. You are this container of experience and knowledge of all different ways. And if you are genuinely committed, not to the work, but to the values this work that you're doing represents, whether your workforce development or social services agency, whatever it is, if you are committed to the values of this work, don't you owe it to yourself as a gift to be bold and to be brave and to do this inquiry and to ask, how, what else can I learn? What else can I learn about my leadership? Because I think as leaders, we get conned that we have to be a certain way. We're going to be the CEO. And it's like, people are working, especially post-pandemic, we're all working differently. We're all relating differently. I think it's important for leaders to look at what your organization is responsible for doing is directly impacted by relationships with people in your workforce. It's easy to get caught up in this hierarchy, this authoritative sort of hierarchy of power. But at the end of the day, we literally are all people. We have to bring that part of our humanity to the work that we do. That's where the relationship work happens. So to fellow leaders out there, be bold, be brave.
I love that.
Look within.
I don't have anything to add to that particular piece. I just want to say, as part of a wrap up, that this is actually hard. Mm-hmm. We had noted a few times, this is a skill set to develop. It can take time to do that. but there's always growth that can occur. So find wherever yours is. Mm-hmm.
Find it.
You had said it. I don't know if I said it explicitly. I could say it now. I absolutely don't have it all figured out. I don't do all the things I'm saying all the time because it's really hard and I don't want to sometimes. I'm just being honest. Like, I do not do it all the time. There's reasons for that. And so I grasp it and I try to do it as much as possible. Sometimes I realize, oh, shoot, I did that over there. Let me go do something about that. I think that people might maybe think they're supposed to do something all the time. I'm like, no, good luck doing it all the time. Mm-hmm. Good luck doing it great. Just try things. Get on the journey. Just get on and go somewhere that you will go. If you're in an organization, hopefully you're going in the direction mm-hmm. you're going. But for yourself, go in the direction that you choose to go. I just wanted to name, like, it's hard. I know that what we're talking about is not 100%. Easy. Even describing it to people, we were like trying to be clear.
It is hard. This is something one of the things I love most about you is your willingness to just be real in that way. This is hard and I don't do it. You know what? I don't do it either. And I'm not going to, I hope I haven't portrayed myself as I got the answers on how to do this. No, I've had a little bit of practice and I don't mean that to be sarcastic. It's when we talk about the journey and the process, it's never ending and it takes practice. And every time you think you learn something and you gain a skill, it's like life comes along and it's actually. Sometimes I do the same thing. I'm just like, the thing that my intellect and my heart is telling me to do in this moment, my body is not interested. I'm not interested. I might take a nap instead and I'm going to not deal. Yeah. And that's okay too. I think we have to find those spaces when we do the hard things, when we do this hard work, we have to find the spaces to be able to give ourselves a break in terms of give ourselves grace, but also literally take the break to restore ourselves so we can continue.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Kim, thank you for this really great conversation.
Thank you.
Thoroughly enjoyed it. I hope this is helpful for people. If anyone wants to get in contact with you, what's the best way to do that?
You can contact me at heartrivercoaching@gmail.com. That's the best place. I'd love to hear from folks. And yeah, thank you for asking. Thank you for inviting me. I love these conversations. I love spending time with you. And it's nurturing and it's motivating. And I appreciate all that you do, Charmaine.
Thank you. Received. I had a colleague of mine, I don't know, maybe a few weeks ago, I told her, I was like, it's really hard to receive. I try and receive things that people give me. I'm like, I just think I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to do that. And she was like, just imagine that you're sitting out in the sun and the rays are like hitting you. Just let it in. Like, just let it in and receive it, which is what I'm doing right now. So thank you. I'm receiving that. Much, much appreciation. If you're listening, please share this episode. Please engage in conversations and figure out what this means for you or your teams or your organization as a whole. Of course, like, subscribe, comment. If you want to get in touch with me, you can visit our website at livingunapologetically.com. You have access to buy my book, Bias Conscious Leadership, A Framework for Leading with Action and Accountability. There's freebies on there. There's guided meditations. Please get in touch. I think that's it. So until next time, bye.